No, I don't do that, I don't see that in the original code either. I don't know why it was purged, but it was in there, in fact, I think.
Make a note of that, Mr. Duncan.
Yeah, I did.
Check for that.
On page, or, yeah, page nine, line 19, begins one of the more substantive parts of the bill, the power to the bank. I guess you can all read those, but they're allowed to make fixed or variable rate loans at their discretion, and according to the bylaws and operating procedures as laid down by the board of directors. They may enter into agreements with the regional, divisions of the Federal Farm Credit System or private lending institutions. And under the Federal Farm Credit System, this bank would be classified as an other financial intermediary, which would give its status to sell its notes or papers through either the Bank for Cooperatives, which is a part of the Federal Farm Credit System. And the Bank for Cooperatives generally finances or leverages monies for cooperatives that qualify. But the interesting thing about this bank is that it may also sell its notes through the Federal Intermediate Credit Bank, which is the leveraging arm of the Production Credit Associations, another part of the Federal Farm Credit System. So it has two outlets within the farm credit system itself. It may also sell notes to the private market. As I recall, the committee substitute removed the provisions that allowed the bank to make to hold an equity position in the operations, as I recall. Mm-hmm. So they are now prohibited from an equity position. They may only make loans. That's pretty much the gist of the bill in a very rough outline. If I may offer a couple of more remarks that I think the committee might wish to bear in mind. There seem to be sort of three options in the area of other financial institutions to assist in the development of fisheries and agriculture in the state. One is the existing state loan programs with the Commercial Fishing Loan Program and the Agricultural Revolving Loan Fund, which would be in competition with anything else that you do create. There is a Production Credit Association which presently has Alaska written into its charter. It's the Northwest Livestock Production Credit Association in Portland. And Alaska is contained in its charter. They do some business now in the state of Alaska. I think something in the neighborhood of $2 to $4 million per year in loans are presently being made through the Northwest Livestock PCA. There has been some discussion about what effect the state loan programs would have on the bank created by House Bill 763. And there has been some concern that the size of the market is such that the competitiveness of the state loan programs with this development bank may affect its viability. Production Credit Association has not, the Northwest Livestock Production Credit Association has not opened a branch office in Alaska, they say, because the market demand is not sufficient to cover their additional overhead costs they would have in manning an office up there. As an alternative to House Bill 763, some people have suggested making an appropriation to help create a Production Credit Association specifically for Alaska, which would require a charter amendment of the Northwest Livestock Production Credit Association and a new charter for a PCA up here. And for purposes of comparison of 763 to a Production Credit Association, I'd like to say that a Production Credit Association has loan term limits that put a 10-year maximum on loans, which for fishing vessels is not very realistic. It is limited strictly to fishermen and farmers, which presently 763 is also. There is no language which provides for loaning to either the processing or marketing sectors of either of those industries, although it was suggested by the consultants who worked with the Interim Resources Committee. State involvement would be limited in a Production Credit Association, and that if they wanted to help finance a PCA to get it started, the only investment they could take would be in Class A preferred stock or something similar to that. Production credit associations can only leverage their money through the federal entity of credit banks. They also require 40% equity in all loans that they make. If we create a new production credit association in Alaska, we lose a lot of the diversity and established track record that has been created through the Northwest Livestock PCA. 763, on the other hand, has the potential of chartering itself to meet specifically the needs of Alaskans. It would have complete term freedom in what loans it would make. Where the Federal Intermediate Credit Bank and PCAs have a 7 to 10 year limit on loan terms, the bank could make longer term loans and sell those papers through the bank for cooperative, which does not have the same provisions for limiting loan terms. It is conceivable that this bill could be expanded to include as eligible participants, not only fishermen and farmers, but resident members of the harvesting and marketing sectors of those two industries also, if the committee so desired. The bill has the advantage, or the bank has the advantage for large projects of being a locus for investments from many different sectors, from both the farm credit system, the private market, and from the state. The state wanted to participate in those. By having the bank chartered in Alaska and addressing specifically Alaskan needs, it is conceivable that the bank could focus its activity on some particular areas of interest to us right now. And an example that comes to mind immediately is bottom fish. The bank could try to make more of a market out there than would naturally be the case. And for purposes of reminding the committee of some comments that the consultants during the interim had with respect to this bank, it was suggested by Dr. Orr, who drafted the initial papers on House Bill 763, that an evaluation should be completed a preliminary feasibility analysis should be completed on the concept of this bank in conjunction with the members of the Federal Farm Credit System and members of the Department of Commerce.
Any questions from the committee?
I just have one, which I don't know if anyone can answer at this time. I notice in the on page 2, it's talking about the initial funding of the bank's operation for the big purchase 60% of the at least not less than 60% nor more than 8% of non voting preferred shares. Is there a fiscal note then which should be allowed with this bill? And,
I would assume we don't actually have one. I don't. We're going to have time.
Yes,
do we have a fiscal note for us?
I'm assuming that's how it's going to operate initially.
The bill, yeah, we'd have to have. Any questions? If not, we thank you very much. We're not going to be able to take any action on this at the time, but we'll get back to you. And again, thank you for your time.
Chairman, do you wish to
Oh, I'm sorry. I sure do.
Chairman, I'm Dick Aikens, Director of the Division of Economic Enterprise, the Department of Commerce and Economic Development. On my right is Mr. Nick Kearney, who is our Agriculture Development Specialist. We're, of course, are very concerned and are, have as a priority in our development program the encouragement of the agriculture industry in the state of Alaska and also of the bottom fisheries. One of the real needs is to provide a financial vehicle that will encourage such a development program, particularly in the instance where the private banking system has not had experience with this type of loan program, and therefore are very reluctant to initiate or to finance this type of development program. Therefore, we are in favor of such a development bank, although we would like to suggest that the concept be expanded to include the marketing and process areas. We think these are just as much in need of a financing vehicle as the farmers or the fishermen themselves. So we would recommend that the Development Bank include a financing program for the marketing section and the processing section. Mr. Carney has studied the development banks in the states of North Dakota, South Dakota, and has visited Spokane Bank. So he would be able to answer any questions that you might have.
Questions from the committee? Mr. Rose.
You say you suggest expanded into marketing and what else?
Processing.
Yeah.
Right.
May I ask you, what does this bill that you can't do now? What does this bill offer that the Department of Economic Development can't do now for the long program?
Well, you want to try?
Yeah.
Basically, it gives us an alternate approach toward financing, and specifically in agriculture, which is my field. We have the Agricultural Revolving Loan Fund, which is operated by the Department of Natural Resources, which is rather limited in scope and gives the farmer only one vehicle. It does not give us access to the large amounts of funds available through the Federal Farm Credit System and the Production Credit Association and the Spokane Bank of Cooperatives. Of course, our Revolving Loan Fund has very little activity in cooperative financing as it is now. Mr. Williams gave a pretty good summary of how this bill interacts with existing PCAs, and one of the things that the bill will do is it gives us control of our destiny. Right now we're more or less at the mercy of agencies that have us under their purview, which are stationed in their headquartered in the Pacific Northwest, and they are not very active in Alaska, and I don't believe ever will be until the state basically takes the lead, and I think this is one of the vehicles that's necessary. We don't have really the capability, even in the revolving loan fund, for processing and marketing loans of any sort. They don't have the size nor the mandate. They're basically designed to be a year-to-year loan fund handling seed fertilizer loans, and they're not really designed for large-scale farming operations or for infrastructure.
Other questions? Awesome, thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair.
All right. Come back to this one later. You were waiting to testify on which bill?
No, but I understood the House Bill 885 was also on the list.
885 was on, I'm sorry. That was second on the list there. All right, we'll hear your testimony and hope we'll have a quorum by the time you get through.
Don't talk that long.
Yeah.
I'll have to go to the farm one. Darn, you have it, man. Hold on.
85?
What is it?
I have a note here that says on the bottom, this one says it was incorporated into House Committee Substitute for Committee Substitute for Senate Bill 399.
Mr. Chairman?
I probably don't have one.
Perhaps I can explain some of the background.
All right.
My name is Ed Heiser, Deputy Commissioner of Fish and Game Department. About 2 or 3 weeks ago, your committee did consider Senate Bill 399, was it? And House Bill 885. At that time, the committee removed several of the parts of 885 and added it to Senate Bill 399. And what now remains in House Bill 885 is a $30,000 appropriation to the commissioner to fund consultant services. To refresh your memory further, the problem with the $30,000 consultant fee thing was a contract with Leonard Lane Associates for something called strategic planning. At the time I was before you the first time, I could not answer very well the question that Representative Greening and others asked about the strategic planning process. So As I understand it, House Bill 885 contains now just a $30,000 appropriation, and it's still in your committee. I had hoped that Commissioner Skoog would be here to review the consultant contract with the committee. Commissioner Skoog is presently in Galena, attending another meeting on possible revisions to the Fish and Game regulatory system. He will be gone until Thursday, and then he's tied up all day Friday.
What's the status of this contract now?
We have a contract with Leonard Lane.
Yes. And he's doing the work?
He is doing the work, and I have with me Steve Pennoyer, Chief Fishery Scientist, Commercial Fish Division, who is involved in the strategic planning process with Leonard Lane. And if the committee would like to hear briefly from Mr. Pennoyer, he can explain what is involved in strategic planning. Would you please?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, my name is Steve Pennoyer. I'm with Research and Commercial Fisheries, and I'm not a professional planner and not really completely conversant with all planning terminology, but I am part of the process, I guess, since I'm actually on one of the subcommittees that is now planning. I think the strategic planning process that's been referred to is an outgrowth of an organizational review done by Leonard Lane and Associates and Keith Speckie in the Governor's Office of the Department's ability to carry out its mandates. They look at our organizational structure, particularly the fact that there are three fisheries divisions, all dealing with various aspects of use of many times the same resource, Fred Division, Commercial Fish and Sport Fish. They looked within the divisions at our organization, how our people were trained in organizational concepts and management of their programs. They came up with a series of recommendations. They were just that. They were recommendations based on interviews and some background work with our own people in the various divisions. The strategic planning process referred to is simply coming up with a three-year organizational goals of the Alaska Department of Fish and Game, setting annual objectives based on those goals, and deciding upon strategies and policies by which the department will allocate its financial and manpower resources to accomplish its objectives. I read that because I don't think I can say it just off the cuff, but basically it's to look at the results of the Lane report and try and to implement them into a group of policies and plans that could then be carried out by the department to reorganize our process of dealing with the public in setting resource goals and objectives and coming up with resource plans. The work is already ongoing, and we've subdivided into two groups, a strategic planning team, which is composed of commissioner and the division directors that will meet periodically to actually set policies and to set work objectives for the department. We also have a technical support team, which I'm a member of, that will provide these people with the data upon which they will make these policy decisions of where we're going to go over the next year in this reorganization process. The commissioner, the consultant, based on the original organizational review, came up with four major issue statements that we would deal with in a whole series of topical statements. And I won't go into all of them, but basically the issue statements were, how can we ensure that the user groups are heard and their needs are adequately addressed in the formulation and achievement of fish and game goals and objectives, within the capabilities of the resources to satisfy them? And that involved how we can ensure that the ongoing opportunities for inputs like advisory committees, boards, and this type of thing are going to continue successfully. How can we ensure that input is adequately synthesized and evaluated in the department? We've got a lot of public input from a lot of sources, and how do you put it all together into coming up with goals and objectives for how you're going to manage the resource? And how can we promote public understanding and acceptance of the process? Is the feedback from the department to the public adequate in terms of their understanding of what we've done to or for them? And that's the first issue we're engaged in. We've already started to develop a database on advisory committees and boards and other groups that synthesize public opinion. We started to talk about how this is translated in the department into some type of action. Is it being adequately synthesized? Are we really reading these needs correctly? The second issue, and we haven't gotten into the others, so I won't get all the detail, but just basically the second one was how to develop coordinated department policies and programs to achieve the optimum strategy for accomplishing the department's goals and objectives. This was basically the organizational question. How to achieve agreement on policies and procedures relating to environmental coordination and program evaluation. How to ensure an organization structure which supports our coordination between particularly the three fisheries divisions. How to ensure that the budgeting process allocates the department's human and financial resources among the divisions in accordance with the department's planning strategies and objectives. Third issue is how to implement a coordinated department-wide management system to ensure program control and evaluation and improve decision-making. And the fourth was how to ensure a cadre of professional managers accountable for the achievement of the department's goals and objectives. And there were a whole series of topical areas relating to these four issues that range from a 200-mile impact of 200-mile extended jurisdiction to regional organization to the role of the boards of fish and game to actual coming up with resource plans. This initial process, strategic planning process, which would basically get us started in this direction, set what the department is supposed to do over the next 3 years to improve its organizational structures, counted on to take something on the order of 6 months. And I believe that specifically is what this particular contract is for. Leonard Lane and Associates are serving as the facilitators and organizers of this process to make sure it keeps flowing and keeps coming together, but they're basically drawing on department staff such as myself to actually come up with the information and data and support it. Being only about 4 weeks into the process, that's about what I can tell you about it.
Questions from the committee?
Mr. Rowe.
Does this have a connection with the work that Keith Specking has done?
Yes, this is a direct outgrowth of the original Leonard Lane Keith Specking review of the department's organization. This process is based on their recommendations for organizational change within the department.
Just to be sure that I understood what you said, House Bill 885, what we should have here is that the sum of $30,000 appropriated from the general fund of the Department of Fish Game Office of the Commissioner.
I think we took the $7,100 house section 1.
Yeah, that is correct. How about the $4,700 in section 2 and the
Section 2 and Section 3 were put into the Senate bill also.
They were also incorporated. That is marked.
Mr. Chairman, basically what we have is the question or the determination as to what will be done with regard to the $30,000 in an empty bill title for 885.
Yes, I thought we were. All right, if there's no further questions, we thank you very much.
And Mr. Chairman, I would still hope that Commissioner Scoob would have a chance to review this with you before you
not having a quorum, Mike. We're not going to be doing anything. Fine. Thank you for your consideration.
Thank you.
And lacking a quorum, we will stand adjourned till 9 o'clock in the morning. We'll try again. We didn't get much done yesterday, but have a hearing. We'll start over.
Skip the hearing.
Not the hearing. Nobody has to do the hearings again. No way.
Just goddamn old.
Mr. Swanson, you requested that you hold House Bill 807 till this morning.
Right. I have a letter from Fish and Game on my request.
They must get up all early to write this.
Mr. Chairman,
the 25th.
They wrote it this morning.
It sounds like.
Thank you.
You ready for motion on Eagle Staff?
Mr. Swanton.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I would move, and I suppose I better write this out, but I would move and ask unanimous consent for amendment to the bill. Section two would read, and section two then would be section three and section renumbered accordingly. The sum of $90,000 be appropriated from the general fund of the Department of Fish and Game, Division of Sport Fish, for the surveillance and reconnaissance of sport fisheries in the area of specifically meant the Toke area, the Tenenoff Flats, and the Cantville area. I can write that out as an amendment for you, so that you have it. But those are specifics, and as the letter explains it, because we are in the process of putting a fish hatchery at Clear, sports fish hatchery, and they really don't. They haven't been able, they have not had the money nor the time, unless I specifically requested a Pacific lake to be checked and see whether it had pike in it or grayling in it, or whether it be adaptable to trout or grayling. They have done that from time to time, but they've had to do it in conjunction with something else, and I think it would be appropriate at this time to allow them to go in and do some of the surveillance work, especially in on the Tenenoff Flats and the Cantwell area and Toke. It's very little to ask for, because I think it would work extremely well and in conjunction with the fish hatchery at Clear.
You make that formal motion?
Yeah, I move and ask unanimous consent. It becomes section two, and section two and three become sections three and four.
Is there objection?
I object in a minute. I'd like to not pardon. How do you come up with $90,000, Red? How do we know that's either not too much or that's enough to do anything? I don't.
60% of the cost of fishery evaluations in this area will be used for air charter time. A substantial percentage of the funds will be required for contractual services. I figured a biologist in-house at $24,000 plus $6,000 a year service at $30,000, and I just put the figure of $60,000 in there for charter time. 6% of the cost. It would give us a little more money in than one. They asked for the survey work contemplated above can be accomplished in-house utilizing one additional permanent biologist.
That one guy
and temporary time.
One guy would be utilizing $60,000 worth of charter time.
No, I don't think so, but I think that a time and a half a biologist at I think it's going to take more than one biologist to do that work. And it will be done over a year's time.
I don't have any problems helping out of here, but I don't think we've got very good information. You know, I don't think the request, if somebody really wants to get into it on the floor.
Well, I didn't have the time to give you just an exact figure. If you want to hold for...
That's why I would suggest perhaps that you do that. We don't hold this bill, but you do that, and I'm sure there'll be other bills coming along that you can...
No, Mr. Chairman. Well, you want to vote it down, Mr. Chairman, it's fine with me. I'm going to make a request for $90,000 for fishery rehabilitation, for surveillance in that area. If it takes two additional, I've got enough money in there to do a good job. And,
Mr. Duncan.
Mr. Chair, I think Mr. Swanson's taking this all wrong. I don't think anybody's really speaking against the need or his right to make the request or perhaps it's done, but
he's got no backup. I don't, we don't very often send things out of this committee with this kind of backup and let it get shot down on the floor, and I think this can very easily. I'm only suggesting that perhaps you do a separate bill, or perhaps you wait till, you know, the other bill's coming along and you can put this in and get some more information.
Put it on a separate bill, right? Finance.
Well, I've moved the bill. I've moved the amendment, Mr. Chairman.
The motion is the amendment is stated to amend the bill by, as stated by Mr. Swanson. Those in favor, raise their right hand. Those opposed, motion failed.
Chair, I move committee substitute House Bill number 807.
Ask unanimous consent. Is there objection? Not, we'll report on committee substitute House Bill 807.
Well, it's just like that lousy land bill.
Is film around, you know, what she
has? I haven't seen it. I don't think she was here yet.
Huh?
You're here in 2 minutes.
Oh, okay.
How do you find him?
We better be careful not to make anybody else mad.
It's all right with me. Can't win them all.
You guys are starting to act just like the public.
That worries me too, you know.
Hey, who's going to get that $50,000 job in this year?
Which one's that?
Is that Sarah?
Shoulder, yeah.
No. She said it didn't pay enough.
I had noticed that.
What are you doing about that? Don't you show
up? You guys got some healthy contributions here.
That's what I like to see, those
$16,000.
Yeah. Check it out.
What bill is that?
$763.
Let's take 898.
$298,200 worth of travel.
How much?
$200,000.
Worth of what?
Where are they going? Startup expenses, 18 committee members.
They've already had more.
It sounds like the Mental Health Board.
Should be.
Executive Med Director, $54,000. Not your job, Diane?
What?
Now your job,
$50,000?
I don't have anything to do with that. I think you got to hire him. Well, you and old Sarah can tangle in front of the post office at high noon.
You got a clothing budget?
You talk about. You've got the same impression of her as I have.
You got talking about Chuck and Sarah?
Skate.
How much is that?
$1,000.
Oh, yeah.
fired out.
Same thing you were looking at, $50,000.
I got everything all screwed up. I got here. I don't believe it myself. That's what I wrote yesterday. Somebody from the public said. That just happened as much as the last one.
How many hours is it for us? Average four hours?
Don't run off, Ernie.
Did you know that?
Don't run off.
Don't run off.
Stay right there by the door.
All the same as the other.
You're right on the floor.
Okay, go on, Ernie.
Don't get far away.
His face got no class on. You better adjourn.
No, stick around. I might forget everything they testified. We don't.
Did you use it up?
Yes, I did.
No, I didn't know you filed.
I saved the street shooter.
Jerry, I've seen, according to the voice of the week, that we still don't have any I'm awfully willing to accept that. You keep making noises like you might not run, and you're going to get all up, a bunch of popped up, ready to go, and then when you file and say, oh, well, I will anyway.
I've got important things to
do. You may be causing us trouble.
Yeah.
It's coming right up.
Is that brown curve?
Yep.
Good.
I got it.
Oh, it goes to right?
Everything.
That's him.
Is that him?
Yeah, right here. Where? Right here. Y'all out the window.
Yeah.
Gee, he drives terrible.
Who's that?
Hey!
I'm expecting him to come in here and sack in with him. He wants to fill up.
It's great to be on the ground.
Well, you and Sarah Hemphill are getting along.
Sarah
Hemphill,
who's that?
That's your girlfriend, isn't it?
Well, I know the young lady.
You got a money bill, Sarah?
What do you say?
Come on
over here,
Alf,
and I want to bend you here.
Before you do anything else, Mr. Dean, put your sign right there.
You can spare the time to get to a committee meeting.
Who decided to put it?
Okay.
I didn't know about it, wasn't on the schedule.
Give him a list of what he's.
Because you weren't here with me.
Okay, we took testimony yesterday on House Bill 898. One thing that we didn't have a forum on, we took testimony. Those members that weren't here when we had testimony, I would hope would have enough faith in the rest of us so that we don't have to go to the hearing witnesses again.
Only half as much as the last bill, I'd move, we move it out.
Is there objection? Hearing none, we'll report out House Bill 898.
Where's Keith?
Right here.
Let's see, what is this?
Mr. Rhodes, committee substitute.
$54,000.
If there's no objections from the committee, I want to hold House Bill 885. That was the $30,000 for Leonard Lane bit. Unless somebody, they indicated yesterday that they would feel more comfortable, the department did, if they had Commissioner School here to give us the backup on that. That would be my preference.
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Becken. Did you want to testify on that one?
I'm capable of doing it.
You're more than welcome.
You may have this.
Regrettably, I didn't bring my file.
I suspect he does have, but then House Bill 885 for information, I said might have forgotten, was the one that we, nothing left but a title, really. We had, we took everything out of it except the $30,000 and put it in another bill. $30,000 for Leonard Lane Associates or somebody for a study on Mr. Speking's
All right, thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chairman, regrettably, I didn't bring my file, but I think from memory I can. The measure asked for $30,000 for management training for the Department of Fish and Game. This came about as a result of the survey, that myself and contractor Lane did during the course of last summer. And in the course of our examination of the department, it became apparent that they were extremely short on management skills and were operating with the same kinds of techniques that they've been operating with since 1965 or whatever. And that was apparent that through management training, with the kind of specialist training that wasn't available in-house, that we could greatly improve the functions of that particular department. As you probably are aware, there had already been a management training effort underway in the Fred division that had been funded the year previously. And in the restructuring of Fred, the obvious need for the rest of the department became apparent. And in my examination, the inability of the department to interact in a modern manner with modern management techniques became very apparent. And so we sought outside help in the form of a contract with Leonard Lane to carry out this management training responsibility. This was done in concert with Commissioner Skoog. Commissioner, incidentally, had some rather modern management training in his background. It became very apparent to him when he took over the helm that this was badly needed. He was cooperative in the effort and very laudatory in the plan management, training plan that Lane Associates had prepared and wanted to undertake. And this is principally why we're seeking the funding. The department has gathered in a whole host of new responsibilities. Not only the traditional ones with the fisheries management, but of the salmon fisheries, that sort of thing, but the movement in the 200-mile limit has placed an enormous burden of new type management responsibilities on them. We felt that rather than go out for a whole bunch of new people, that we could make the people in-house more effective. Generally, the departmental people have subscribed to this rather willingly and said, hey, you know, we're willing, if you can train us to be more effective, to interact with each other in a more modern manner, adopt what we call a matrix management system, we're willing to undergo the training. And that's about where we are with respect to that. But I think that the money will effectively give them tools to turn out a better job.
Mr. Meekin.
Keith, what one of the questions we had, I don't know how many times this bill has been up, but the first time it came up, was it says establish a strategic planning team, and then they use the word strategic quite a bit here. Could you explain that?
Well, yes, that planning team is a group inside the organization that will create the planning effort. In other words, throughout the whole department.
I see. Well, but the it's not a type of management. You're calling it a strategic planning team. They're going to do the planning.
That's
how
right.
The thing should be run.
That's right.
And then they'll work themselves out of business. Right?
That's exactly right. In other words, it's not a permanent arrangement, but it's to go through this management planning and training process. It's principally a training process. The contractor comes in and goes down there and
trains the people
and actually provides the training course in-house.
Further questions, Mr. Beckett? Thank you very much.
All right, thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Chairman, I'll move House Bill 885 with the section would appropriate a sum of $30,000 from the General Fund Department of Fish and Game Office Commissioner to fund consultant services required to implement the recent organization review.
Is there objection to the motion?
Immediate effective date.
Not so ordered. Is that the one, Mr. Gardner, that you were interested in?
Mr. Meekins has a more interesting chapter here about black holes.
Recall we had testimony yesterday from Mr. Osterbach, Mr. Williams, and we didn't have a forum.
Didn't have a fiscal note either.
We didn't have a fiscal note either.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I'll make my testimony brief. I think that One of the things to think of in this bill is that look at the history of agriculture in the United States. And this bill is attempting to duplicate and tie into the financial and credit system that was built up starting in the 1920s and through the Depression that helped build American agriculture. And then in 1971, Congress extended this, the federal farm credit system, to include fisheries. And this might be one of the reasons why fishing is basically a sick industry in the United States as a whole, when you look at the fishing industries of other countries and how they have developed. And on the other hand, you look at agriculture in the United States being the most advanced and sophisticated of anywhere in the world, and a very healthy industry generally. And the Fisheries Development, the Fisheries and Agriculture Development Bank, it's an effort to move this concept into Alaska and to tie into the regional and national credit systems that exist in the federal farm credit system. I'm going to offer an amendment that would clarify one of the original intents of the bill in my mind. But this development bank would have the capability of not only making capital loans to fishermen and farmers for to buy boats or farming equipment or silos or something like this, but it would also be capable of making the seasonal operational loans and loans for capital flow as the federal farm credit system entities do on the national level. And with the amendment I'm going to offer, would clarify that this bank would also be able to finance in the not only the production sectors but the harvesting and market sectors for residents of the state. And I think that with that, this has a great advantage to the state in that it will tie into the low interest capital is available through the Spokane Bank for Cooperatives, which generally runs around 7% for long-term loans. There has been the question brought up as to whether this is some kind of duplication of the agriculture and fishermen's loan funds that we have in the state now in the bill you considered yesterday. I think it is some duplication, although this is obviously intended to be much broader and apply to more than just the purchasing of fishing boats or gear and more than just the financing farm. And I think that eventually, in say 5 years or such, if this Fisheries Development Bank developed at a good rate and was a successful organization, that we probably would be able to phase out the fisheries and agriculture loans because we'd have a more efficient organization that supplied more of the needs of the fisheries and agricultural sector. But at this time, I don't think we could do that. But in the long run, I think we could. The other advantage of this entity is that eventually, over 10 or 15 years, it would become owned by the people who are borrowing from it. We wouldn't be facing a situation where we're just loaning out state general fund revenues that we may need for some other purpose 10 or 15 years from now. This would be owned by the people who are borrowing money from it, and they eventually would take over the stock ownership. And I think that's much better, at least from my point of view, about what the government ought to be doing, what the private sector ought to be doing. The other advantage of this institution is that it would develop some expertise in those two sectors of resources, fisheries and agriculture. And I think that's the general problem with other financial institutions trying to loan money, whether it's a state loan program or the banks in the lower 48, whatever. They really don't know much about farming in Alaska. Nobody does, for that matter. But this institution would grow and be eventually owned and controlled by people in the fisheries and agriculture sector. So it's inevitably going to have some expertise as to what are good operations to finance. But now I'd like to hand out the amendment that I'd like to offer. I think this would clarify what was one of the original intents of the bill. what the amendment basically does is it makes it clear that this isn't just to finance commercial fishermen and farmers per se, but commercial fishing and farming businesses. And the idea being here is that, well, we want to promote just more than fishermen and farmers per se, but fishing and farming businesses, whether those businesses happen to be owned by fishermen and farmers or not. Because otherwise, if we do not do this, we're kind of ensuring that outside corporations are the ones who are going to developing our harvesting and marketing sectors. We're just going to help out the people at the production level and then not make financing available to Alaska corporations who want to do processing and marketing. And I think this is especially obvious in the fishing area, where much of our processing and marketing is not even done by American corporations, it's done by alien corporations. And I think this is an area where we can extend this concept and this good low credit to Alaskan corporations who want to be in the processing and marketing business. And I think it equally applies in the agricultural area too.
Mr. Gordon, could I ask you a question this time?
Yes.
I'm sure there's an obvious reason for it. Why not restrict it strictly to Alaskan people, 100%? I mean, the benefits or any...
Instead of saying a majority? Well, I suppose there's nothing wrong with that, except that it seems to me as long as a corporation or business or joint venture is, you know, majority controlled by Alaskans, then, you know, that's about as much as our interest. That if there was some small ownership by somebody else, for instance, if, let's say, we all went together here and we're all residents of Alaska and we created a corporation and we're in the fish processing business or agriculture, and then, you know, one of us moves to the lower 48, then we're not a resident corporation anymore. You know, I don't see any advantage in excluding that. And you may, in fact, want to allow joint ventures because outside people may have some expertise that may be an advantage to people in Alaska who don't have the, you know, expertise. But, you know, I think we want to draw the line at majority control. At least I do.
Mr. Chairman, if I recall, the reason the House Resources Committee removed this language initially was fear that there would be certain corporations going to own the PCH in Alaska. And then there were also fears, I don't know, I haven't really looked closely at this new change, but if it would guarantee that resident Alaskans would be the majority stockholders in the corporation, I think the committee did and intended the bill to read that way. But there were some fears in changing it. They would be dictating policy to the board, which is outlined in this piece of legislation, that those maybe policy decisions can be left to the board of directors of this corporation, or of the PCA. But I know that's the reason the Resource Committee removed the part corporations and processors, because processors in Alaska now are basically foreign-owned, and that would leave them open to, you know, buying into these corporations, and Alaskans wouldn't have the opportunity.
One other question. Under this, you can buy fishing boats, right?
Mm-hmm.
It bothers me just a little for Alaskan state government of Alaska in any way to be financing a fishing vessel, for instance, more than anything else, a fishing vessel for somebody outside the state. Even a part ownership, maybe it's not so bad, but one of the problems we had for years, of course, I consider a problem, is that the out-of-state people involved in our fisheries, legally, there's no way we can throw them out, but I'm not too enthused about helping them in any way. That's the reason I have rather basic my question.
Yeah, I can see what you're saying, and you know, maybe that it would be better to approach it in terms of, you know, because we're trying to cover a broad area, both individuals who would own a farm or a fishing boat, and then people who might go into processing. And then that, when you get at a corporation level and you have stock, then there is probably more argument to, for the kind of approach here, saying majority ownership and control. Whereas with a small, at a lower level of just the one single business, maybe you can just say it has to be 100% resident owned and not create any problem. One thing I might point out, on the last line of this amendment, this was drafted by Mr. Barrier, another context, but not only provides that in the terms of corporation that a majority of the people own it, but a majority of the stock be controlled. So you have to have both provisions, that residents have to own it and they have to control a majority of the stock. So you have to meet both of those criteria. So that we didn't have a situation that Diane was suggesting where you had a resident, quote, resident corporation where somebody else is really controls it. So this would require both parts of it. But I wouldn't have any problem with taking that approach in terms of like fishing vessels or farms or something like that, that requiring that to be 100% ownership. But I think that if you get into corporations, you're going to kind of be limiting yourself more than you need to.
I would tend to agree with that, and I don't, in my own mind, I wouldn't see the problem, say, with a processing plant or something like that, corporation, but it seems to me that to a certain degree we'd be kind of working against our own interests. In other words, if we limit it, for instance, fishing vessel, if you limit that to residents, state residents of the state, we're giving them a boost up, a leg up, a help over, you know, people from the outside, which would be, seem to me, would be desirable.
Mr. Chair, well, presently, 90% of all processors in the state, I believe, are Japanese owned, and the concern, and that's a majority. And I know the Resource Committee, voiced the fear that somehow Alaska wouldn't be able to participate in this. The corporations that are viable now will be the ones that will be utilizing this type of vehicle. Mm-hmm. So we left it to farmers and fishermen.
Again, Mr. Gardner, from my point of view, and I know this isn't the proper way to look at it, but when I think of a processing plant, I think why do I think a processing plant is desirable? Is because number one, it would furnish employment for Alaska residents. Number two, it would provide a place for Alaska fishermen to sell their fish. So I view that for instance, a corporation in the processing business, I view them a little different than I do the fishermen. Anyway, that. Proceed.
Jim.
Mr. Guy.
Well, can funds acquired through this vehicle here be used to purchase existing processing plants?
Yes.
You can.
The Board of Directors, what our idea from the Resource Committee was to give as much discretion to the Board of Directors of this development bank, and then have them come back if there's problems, with this piece of structuring, then they can make policy or come back to legislature if they have to change whatever they need to change to fit the needs of
Mr. Osterbeck.
No, Mr. Chairman, I don't know if you know it, but Oregon, Washington, California are already in this organization. And they got about 5 crab boats now from Seattle, what they helped produce what's in Alaska. And they also funded the Dungeness boats and some salmon boats down along the Oregon coast. So they've been giving loans. I mean, this wouldn't be a vehicle to help them. They were already in it. The only ones not in it now is Alaska. And the president of the bank and then the vice president was up here from the Spokane Bank, and they said They have never lost anything yet on loaning to fishermen. That's why they, you know, think we should get into it. So what I'm trying to say, I don't think what we're doing now is going to help them people in Washington, Oregon, because you're already in it. And I think it should be, you know, our board, whenever it's appointed, would have a lot to say on just who is going to get to vote. Does that make any sense or not?
What about, Mr. Chairman, what about...
Mr. Guy?
What about collateral requirements? I don't seem to see any...
That's going to be up to the bank in terms of their articles of incorporation and bylaws, but probably the reality of what happened is that the Spokane Bank for Cooperatives, which will sells revenue bonds, which will really provide the bulk of their financing, generally requires 20% to 40% equity, and so that's generally what you're going to have unless this bank would put up part of a loan to decrease that amount of equity. But that's going to be up to the, you know, policy of the board. But they're going to have to more or less fit within the guidelines of the Spokane Bank if they want to use their funding mechanism, which is 20% to 40%.
Mr. Rhodes?
And this amendment was passed around here. If I read this right, the first one is applies to House Bills 763, and the second one applies to the committee substitute for it. Is that right?
It should all apply to the committee substitute. Which one did you thinking applied to the first thing?
First one, page 2, line 2. That page 2, line 2, the committee substitute.
Yeah, okay, well,
it doesn't have the information.
Okay, it should start on page 1, line 29, actually. It goes on to both pages.
Okay, and then we're working on the committee substitute.
Yes.
Not the bill.
Yeah, that should be page 1, line 29. It's in that subsection 1, it's the last 4 words.
What kind of changes would we have to make if we, along the line we talked about a few minutes ago, to limit it to?
I think that it would be a little more complicated, and I was just trying to do it here, and I think we'd have to draft 2 different subsections and differentiate between, you know, like as vessel loans, as differentiate production from harvesting, and then put different eligibility requirements on it.
Did the sponsor of the bill, do you have any objection to that?
I don't.
No.
In terms of...
Would you...
I think we can do that.
We're not going to be... We're going to run out of time here. Anyway, we're not going to be able to get the thing done right now. Would you... Would you examine that and prepare some amendments to do that, and then get back on the bill and have a look at it and see what it would look like?
Are you intending to meet again at 1:15?
That's a question we got. I think, don't we have a joint session today at 2?
Yeah. Or what?
Confirmation.
Confirmation.
I suspect we wouldn't get back on this bill by that time. I think Mr. Guy had some constituents in that wanted to make a presentation at 1:15, and that would probably take up just about what time we have between that and confirmation. So the best we could do would be after the joint session.
We can have it prepared by then.
Would you do that, please?
After the joint session.
After the joint session, we'll come back. Before we start with our regular order of business, Mr. Guy has a couple of constituents here that are in town and asked for an opportunity for some comments on a bill, and this is a common courtesy we afford to all our members. You ask them to come up, and if I have the names right, Mr. Robert Quicken from Bethel Alcoholism Treatment Center.
Yes.
And Mr. Fred Pete, Yukon Kuskokwim Health Corporation, also from Bethel. Okay, and you wanted to comment on Senate Bill 540?
Yes.
All right, would you proceed, sir? The floor is yours.
I'm Bob Butkin, the program director of the Bethel Alcoholism Treatment Center. I want to take this opportunity to thank the chairman of the committee, Representative Guy, for allowing us to address the committee on Senate Bill 540. This is the result of Mike Coletta's travels this last summer and fall throughout the state, trying to get citizen input on alcoholism proposals. Senate Bill 540 is an act making a special appropriation to the State Office of Alcoholism in the sum of $8,200,000, specifically giving the Office of Alcoholism monies to do planning, coordination, regulation, monitoring, and evaluation on statewide alcoholism efforts. It specifically emphasizes that staff people working in alcohol programs be trained, they be given technical assistance, and that areas of a program be included to include prevention, treatment, and other factors to control alcohol abuse and alcoholism. This piece of legislation would provide the State Office of Alcoholism adequate monies to develop programs which could better deal with the problem of alcoholism in the state of Alaska. I would like to urge this committee to support that bill when it is placed on your agenda. I would also like to make a couple comments in regards to another favor, if you will, that you might do for the people of Alaska. In March 1978, the Governor's Advisory Board on Alcoholism met in a regular session. And at that time, they were told that over 50% of the people that go through the alcoholism program in the Salvation Army in Anchorage are Native people generally who do not live in the Anchorage area, that they're from other places in the state. Our own program in Bethel, for the first 7 months of this current fiscal year, 54% of the people that came through our program don't live in Bethel, they live in the surrounding villages. I spoke with Senator Coletta a little bit yesterday, and it was his feeling that monies to the State Office of Alcoholism should not necessarily be appropriated to the population centers, but rather to the areas where the need is the greatest. Based on the statistics, based on what's actually happening in the state, the rural programs, the city rural programs are the areas that are in need of a great deal of development for alcohol programs. If some of this money isn't put into the villages, really we're wasting our efforts trying to put band-aids over the wound, if you will, by trying to run Anchorage programs and Bethel programs and not really deal with village people where the problem is comes from. This piece of legislation, then, just once again to kind of repeat myself, is something that we in Bethel strongly support, and it is a much needed bill and would provide the State Office of Alcoholism with adequate funds to really start to tackle the problem. I am open for questions now if anyone has any comments. Thank you.
Hi, Mr. Again, I don't have the bill before me. Does 540 does basically what? Does it increase the tax, or is it in the distribution, or the funds, or just basically what's it addressing? So
there is some disagreement as to the amount of revenues collected on alcohol tax, but this bill is only an appropriation bill. It totals $8,200,000, and according to the figures that Mr. Coletta has computed, this $8.2 million is the amount that is currently available based, I believe he said, on licenses and alcohol beverage tax fees. He is supporting an effort to it's House Bill 196, which is the governor's excise tax bill, passed through the legislature in an attempt to provide additional revenues for corrections, courts, other agencies affected by alcohol abuse, but to use the monies that are now available, which is this $8.2 million for alcohol programs.
How much, do you know just offhand how much money the state's actually spending on alcohol-related programs at the present?
The State Office of Alcoholism, I believe, has a budget of $2.5 million for the current fiscal year. They are stating that they should be operating on a $4.5 million budget. This would allow them to have additional monies to do a statewide training program, education, prevention, and establish additional treatment facilities.
House Bill 196 would increase the tax on alcohol, is that?
Yes.
Do you have any idea what the estimate of the amount of money that the additional funds that would raise?
In speaking with Senator Coletta yesterday, the figure was originally quoted at $4.5 million, and that has been revised to $5 million. Apparently, there was a new fiscal note prepared. And I'm not sure if it was for the House Hess Committee or Senate. I'm not sure where that financial note went to. But apparently, things have changed this year, and that required the adjustment.
Questions from the committee? Ms. Buckle.
I was in Bethel when Senator Coletta and his group came and had their hearing, so I was familiar with what testimonies were made on behalf of the people of Bethel on this question. What I really would like to know is if you're talking about the programs getting decentralized, that is, I think the trend in state government now is just being talked about, but it's probably going to become a reality in a few years. What I would like to know is this, that, you know, Bethel is dry, and still alcoholism is one of the most serious problems there. Has there been any action on the part of the city of Bethel to work with WEAN and other people there to see that they don't bring in the booze as people order them from Anchorage?
I believe that there has been some attempt, some contact made between the city of Bethel and WEAN, but the outcome was something to the effect that WEAN is a commercial carrier, and to limit them from transporting alcohol is limiting their right to do business. So the city of Bethel really wasn't in the position to do anything with WEAN except to say, isn't there anything we can do? And WEAN, on the other hand, saying, not really, there's nothing we can do. It's part of our right to do business. We can't really tell you who's shipping and what. That's not a good business practice. There have been pieces of legislation that would make it more difficult for commercial carriers to transport alcoholic beverages into dry communities. I do know in some of the surrounding villages, they are very strict in regards to that, and they do not allow alcohol to be transported into the village. There may be some question as to whether or not that's completely in keeping with civil liberties, but I strongly support that. I think communities have a right to determine how it is they will live. Right offhand, I don't know what the legislation numbers would be that would help restrict commercial air carriers from transporting alcoholic beverages into dry communities. But the city of Bethel has tried to cooperate with the Alcohol Beverage Control Board in an attempt to apprehend violators of the local option regulations. That needs some serious work. I remember last spring, two members of the Alcohol Beverage Control Board came to Bethel in their sport coats, white shirts, and ties, and went around knocking on people's door asking for whiskey. And I don't know any bootlegger in any state that would be willing to sell a bottle of whiskey to somebody traveling in twos with white shirts and ties. That won't work. Bethel police have got some problem because it's a small department. The community knows the police officers. And for that matter, most of the community knows everyone in the community. We do need, I think, some additional outside help. We have contacted the state troopers to see if they can help us in any way to help apprehend some violators in this local option. And we're still continuing our efforts to have the Alcohol Beverage Control Board cooperate with us in this matter also.
Excuse me a second for the benefit of the two members who just came in, Mr. Butkin and Mr. P from Bethel, and Mr. Guy asked that we give them an opportunity while they were in town to put some comments on Senate Bill 540 and House Bill 196, which are not before us, but since they were here, they afforded them that courtesy.
See, one of those bills, does one of those bills deal with authorizing private clubs to obtain liquor licenses or not? If not, what's your opinion on that bill?
That bill is, I believe, Senate Bill 311. I had a good discussion with Senator Coleman yesterday in regards to that matter. My concern is the control of the local government, the assembly, and the city council to say, no, we don't want this to happen. And yet, I can see Senator Holman's point in trying to allow service organizations, specifically in this case the VFW organization, to have an occasional get-together which includes the use of alcohol. I am not opposed to drinking. As a treated person in an alcohol program, I have to recognize the fact that some people can drink alcohol all right and some people cannot. To completely prohibit it is not the answer for most communities. But if a community does decide to go dry, I think they should have the right to stay that way. One of the things that Senator Holman suggested they might do in terms of reaching a compromise is having the local assembly go through a review process. So if a club permit were issued, say, to the VFW, after 90 days or 60 days, whatever, they could make a final recommendation to the Alcohol Control Board. And at that time, then the permit would become a permanent permit for a specified period of time. Another thing that they said we might be able to do is just simply, if this bill passes, is to limit the issuance of these permits one at a time, not for a whole 12-month period. So there are several compromises that could allow the local agent, the local assemblies and governments to really keep control on this. And if that's kept in mind, then personally I do support that legislation.
How about a situation where they're allowed a permit that is contingent on authorization on a one at a time basis by the assembly? I saw some suggestion that I think in the Tons of Drums, I was looking at the, I saw some opposition that I was just wondering why they couldn't, you couldn't arrange it where the assembly would allow for these particular institutions a one-time authorization. And if they would have to come back, if they're going to have another.
Yeah, that option is open in that legislation. It does say that a permit can be issued for a period up to 12 months. And so there's any time in between that. It could be one party clear up to one party every 2 weeks. We talked about that 2 week period. I'm really not comfortable with that. If we give the VFW a club permit for a 12 month period every 2 weeks, there would be a big drunk down at the VFW hall. That would definitely cause some adverse effects in the community. But it was felt once a month was not adequate, twice a year was not adequate, and it almost seemed like it was almost an arbitrary decision to say 2 weeks. It didn't want it nightly, because that totally defeats any kind of purpose of voting a community drive. I expressed the concern, is it possible that there may be 20 clubs operating in the city, and all you had to do was be a member of these 20 organizations, and it would be like going from one bar to another. And it really wasn't answered. I think that still exists, but it's really unlikely, given the circumstance of the city council and the local assemblies. It's very doubtful that they would let the thing get that far out of hand. Also, the way the thing is written, charitable organizations and service clubs is specifically defined, so organizations that would be entitled to a club permit would have to have been in existence for a one-year period, and they would have to be a firmly well-established organization in the community before they'd be eligible for a club permit in the first place.
Were there questions? Did you have any statements you wish to make, Mr. B?
Yes.
You just want. Are you through, Mr. Wickman?
Yes, thank you.
You proceed.
My name is Fred Pete. I am employed at Bethel as a regional technical assistant in the Alcoholism Prevention Program of the Yukon Kuskokwim Health Corporation. We're after college YKHC. YKHC is now operating a public law 93638 contract as a health services agent for some 16,000 Native Eskimo residents of 55 regional villages, which are scattered over a 58,000 square mile tundra region of the Yukon-Kuskokwim Delta. This region, in which I was born and have lived all my life, now has a severe and excessive rate of alcoholism and mental health disease. Over 12% of the inpatient workload at the Bethel PHS Native Hospital in a recent year were admitted as a direct result of alcohol abuse. The YKHC mental health workload in fiscal year 1977-78 increased threefold over the previous year, and during the past year, 28% of all mental health clients treated by YKHC staff had alcohol-related problems. It generally is recognized that the primary cause of alcoholism and mental health disease is the rampant acculturation process which my people are undergoing. The resulting role, deprivation, sense of insecurity, and its attendant depression among my people have led to excessive mental health disease and the grasping on of alcohol as a last despairing means of possible self-restoration. Experience has shown that in order to counterattack these degrading effects of rampant acculturation, individual village alcoholism programs must be initiated wherein the communal and self-identity of my people are reestablished at the local level. All other types of approaches have proven to be only band-aid type operations which cover the wound but do not eradicate the disease. Individual village alcoholism programs which emphasize group alcoholism education in the schools and at all communal village meetings must be conducted by respected village leaders who have been trained in alcoholism education, counseling, treatment, and alternative forms of alcoholism prevention. It is my job, together with another co-worker, to establish and maintain such programs in 30 of the 55 regional villages by the close of 1983. Such a comprehensive program costs money. I and my co-worker have established 8 such village programs, 3 of which have been in operation under minimal Title VI CEDA funds for the past year at the villages of Hooper Bay, Atkeck, and Atkachuk. A fourth, also in operation for the past year at Neposkap, has been funded both by CETA and by the State Office of Alcoholism and Drug Abuse. The other four village programs at Nunavichuk, Mountain Village, Tuksuk Bay, and Quinahawk have been funded under Title VI CETA funds from May 1, 1978 to the close of this fiscal year. We have been told by the CETA prime sponsor that funds may not be available for any of these programs during FY79. Therefore, the YKHC Alcoholism Prevention Department is requesting a total of $213,204 from the State Office of Alcoholism and Drug Abuse for these eight village programs during FY79. We are asking $16,602 each for the Atkeck and Atkachuk programs, which require only one alcoholism educational counselor, and $30,000 each for the remaining six villages, each of which require two alcoholism educational counselors to provide services for their home village and four neighboring villages. Our request for such funding already has been reviewed and approved by the Health Services Agency for our region, namely the South Central Health Planning and Development Incorporated. YKHC has a proven track record of accountability. We are asking much, this we realize, but if you grant these funds for residents of rural Alaska, you can be assured these monies will not be wasted. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Mr. B. And any questions from the committee? If not, we want
to...
Mr. Guy?
Can we ask of Mr. Pete to make copies of... his testimony to the committee.
Could you do that, sir? Could you give us a copy, or could you give us a furnish, even one copy, Mr. Guy, can have staff to complete it for the rest of the committee. If there are no questions, we want to thank you very much for taking time for your question. And we have to go to joint session here very shortly, and I would ask the committee members to come back, reconvene.
Oh, I have a meeting at 3 o'clock. I've got to go. So I just wanted you to know that.
Go ahead and go.
I don't feel I'm starting an arm tattoo.
I won't be here.
I would, I would ask the committee to come back after the joint session. We do have one bill that we've had testimony on for two separate days here, and I'd like to get it out.
Yes.
Off the Gardner and back to 573 or 63 or 600, something like that.
63.
Yeah.